We're not hearing you.
All right, I'll talk louder. Is the mic on?
I don't even think they're on.
We're not. We think they're not on.
I don't know how to turn them.
It was designed by a Dodger.
They're not on.
Okay, now?
Sorry.
All right.
It's going on the system. It's just not.
Okay.
Can't hear too well in here.
So, all right. We'll just ask
louder.
You to speak up
louder.
So the people in the back row can hear you.
All right. Again, the basic goal is to provide a brief overview of the court cases that get you to the point where you're looking at these constitutional amendments that you have before you today. When I talk about contribution limits, what I'm talking about is limits on the amount of money that people can give to candidates who are running for office. And when we talk about expenditure limits, we're talking about the amount of money that candidates can spend once they've received the money. In Oregon, this whole thing started in 1975 with a case called Darris versus Myers, where the Oregon Supreme Court struck down a statute the legislature had passed which limited the amount of money that candidates could spend when they were running for office. That was a 1975 case. Oregon was ahead of the curve legally on that. In 1976, the biggest case in the history of campaign finance came down. That's Buckley versus Vallejo. In that case, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld contribution limits and struck down expenditure limits. And these were both under the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The reason for the distinction is the court said that you could limit contributions because it's the act of giving the money that is the expression that's protected by the Constitution. The court said that since it's the act of giving that's protected, you don't get more speech basically by giving more money. They said that the opposite was true with expenditure limits, however, that in fact you do get more speech when you spend more money. Therefore, to summarize, the court said you cannot limit expenditures made by candidates. The next big case in Oregon was all the way up to 1997, which responded to the passage by initiative of Ballot Measure 9, which was an initiative that established contribution limits in Oregon in statute that did not amend the Constitution. Those were challenged at the Supreme Court. The court struck down the statutory contribution limits because the court said they violated Section 8, Article 1 of the Oregon Constitution, which is our free expression provision. So what you have now is a sudden disconnection between the First Amendment and the expression provisions of the Oregon Constitution, which means that something that would be permissible under the First Amendment is not permitted under the Oregon Constitution because our standards are a little bit higher. The court basically said that contributions are protected speech and that a contribution limit was directed specifically at speech. It was not directed at any particular harm that the legislature could regulate. It basically threw out the baby with the bathwater because it prohibited any contribution regardless of whether or not any specific harm occurred. Then at the federal level in 2000, the next big case came down, which was Nixon versus the Missouri Government PAC. That's the case that stands for the proposition that state limits on contributions are okay under the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The important thing in that case was the court said that state limits do not have to be tied to the $1,000 federal limit. You can go much lower than that. The only limit on that is that you have to provide candidates enough money to enable them to run some sort of an effective campaign. And the other central theme that flows through these federal cases is that the limits have to be justified by the state's interest in preventing corruption or the appearance of corruption. That's the basic state interest that the court at the federal level has recognized as a justification for limiting contributions. Of course, the analysis under the Oregon Constitution is slightly different. So all of those cases lead you to the point where you have these four or five constitutional amendments before you. The reason you have them is that we have to amend the Oregon Constitution in order to enact any sort of contribution limits in this state. And these various amendments take different approaches. You can see that most of them take a fairly general approach in that they simply authorize the people by initiative or the legislature to enact statutory contribution limits. I think SJR 3 actually contains the limits and the details in the Constitution itself. The more general measures also differ somewhat in what they apply to. You'll notice that some of them allow laws that prohibit contributions. Those are aimed at tying the Oregon system to what's permissible under federal law. Because under federal law, you are allowed to prohibit contributions directly from corporations and labor unions, and you can also limit certain expenditures made by corporations and labor unions in candidate races. The other thing to note is that some of these are narrower in that they apply just to contributions to candidates. Others would allow limits on contributions to general multi-candidate political committees, which then eventually make contributions to candidates. So with that, I think I'll stop, and if you have questions, I'd be happy to try to answer.
Senator Burdick.
Madam Chairman, thank you. Thank you for this overview. There was another, I remember I actually ran under the old campaign finance limitations in 1996 before they were thrown out. And I remember during that experience that the candidates were very severely limited in what they could spend, and yet individual groups could launch unlimited independent expenditure campaigns that were totally out of control of the candidate. So the candidate was sitting there trying to run a campaign with all these campaigns running around him. And I remember back in the 70s, or I think it was around 75 or maybe 73, Oregon used to have a single treasurer provision in the election law that required all expenditures for any campaign to be run through that campaign. In other words, it made the independent expenditures illegal. Do you, and this is maybe unfair because I should have mentioned this to you ahead of time, but do you happen to remember what the case law was on that and whether any of these measures would help to address the other problem that I see in our campaign finance, which is these independent expenditures campaigns?
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, that was the result of one of the results of ballot measure 9 was that it resulted in more independent expenditures. And the difficulty with that legally is that the courts have said basically that you may not limit independent expenditures. The fact that they're independent means that they're made by definition without consultation with the candidate. As soon as they can be shown to be made with the candidate, then they're no longer independent and they would be subject to any contribution limits. So I'm not sure what happened in 1975, but under the current legal framework, it would be nearly impossible to limit in any way those independent expenditures. One of these bills does require more reporting and reporting on a more timely basis of independent expenditures that are made. But given the state of the current jurisprudence, it's very, very difficult to rein those types of expenditures in.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for joining us. Next up, Senator Charlie Ringo. You don't want to testify? You're just here for your intellectual stimulation? Okay. I open hearings on all the bills, so feel free to comment on any or all of them, should you so desire.
Thank you very much, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Charlie Ringo, Senator from District 17, and I'm here in support of SJR 20, although I would also support some of the others that are before you today. I just finished a campaign in November where I raised and spent $650,000. It was the most expensive legislative race in the state's history, and it's obscene to spend that amount of money on a legislative race. I am convinced that I could have conveyed my message just as well and had a good conversation with the voters for a lesser amount, except as we all know, because we've all run campaigns, you're competing with an opponent that is also doing everything that person can to raise substantial amounts of money. I think that the public is not well served by that for a couple reasons. One is the mere fact of raising that amount of money during a campaign makes it harder to have genuine conversations with the voters about the issues they care about. The other thing, and this is unpleasant and touchy, is I believe that legislators, elected officials, are to a degree influenced by campaign contributions. And I'm not going to say anybody's bought. I don't think anybody in this room is bought. People have their free opinion, but legislators are influenced. And that's why PACs give money, because they want to influence. And I think the public is the big loser when that happens. Now, what can be done about this? There is a place for political contributions. I think that the question is, should Oregon allow more contributions than other states? Should our free speech extend further than is currently allowed by the United States Constitution under the First Amendment? And I don't see a reason why it should. I'm convinced that Oregon's political system would work just fine if we brought our free speech protections in line with the federal protections under the First Amendment. And that's what my bill would do, SJR 20. SJR 20 itself imposes no limits of any kind. It simply says that we in Oregon are choosing to allow limits, and then we're going to have it go to the second step at some point to decide what those limits are. And that's controversial. Some people think the limits should be higher. Some people think they should be lower. And there are other proposals that you will hear today that have those limits and would build those limits into the Constitution. I think it's cleaner just to say we in Oregon will allow for limits to be placed and that our Constitution will not prohibit those limitations. Then at a later date, we can come back and decide what is the proper amount of those campaign limits. So that's what SJR 20 is intended to do, and I would invite any questions.
Thank you, Senator Ringo. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much.
Have a great afternoon.
Yes.
Next up, we have the dynamic duo, Representative Max Williams and Senator Kurt Schrader.
I thought you were saying I'm sorry about the dynamic discrimination.
No, I almost called Senator Schrader a representative.
I'll let Batman go first.
Thanks, Robin. I'll try and pare down my comments. For the record, I'm Kurt Schrader, State Senator, Senate District 20. Appreciate the opportunity to be here and testify before you. I guess the immediate question you ask is, well, why do we even care about campaign finance reform? Don't we have bigger fish to fry here in the state of Oregon right now? I guess I'd answer that, you know, this is an opportune time to deal with a lot of Oregon's crucial issues, and given the focus the people, hopefully, and certainly legislators have on the financial dilemma our state faces, I think one of the glaring things that citizens focus on is, well, geez, how can you spend so much on these campaigns and so little in some ways on state services? So it begs the question, can we make contact with voters and citizens in a more thoughtful way that empowers them and makes us look a little more real to them? Quickly, as you know, the cost of campaigning is skyrocketing. I don't have to tell any of you that. Nationally, since 76, it's frankly gone from $100 million a year to $1 billion a year on some of these House and Senate campaigns at the U.S. level. The Oregonian just had a big article the other day talking about the skyrocketing costs here in Oregon with Republican candidates for governor spending $17 million and Democratic candidates spending another $13 million. And this is somewhat insane given the remuneration one receives for these offices and, again, the types of issues that we need to be dealing with. The other issue besides just the cost of campaigns that begs answering is that ever-present feeling by the electorate that there's this corruptive or appearance of undue influence that goes on here at the Capitol in Salem or even in Washington. And while we can't do anything about the federal level, I think it's important to look at the perception we have by the populace. Federal cases have upheld contribution limits as long as they're thoughtful and allow us to get our message out. And I think the bill here, the bills we've got, Representative Williams and myself, are a or companion items that go together to help bring and regain the trust of the voters once again. We're only one of five states, Charlie probably alluded to, that have unlimited campaign contributions. We've been a leader in the public empowerment process. All of us, I think, in this building are trying to get citizens more involved, counties, local governments, this sort of thing, and by not having any campaign contribution limits, I think it's a bit of a smack against the state of Oregon. You know, legally, our free speech clause is somewhat more broadly interpreted than the federal one. So, as alluded to before, we're going to have some constitutional changes. The good news is that since the Van Atta decision here in Oregon, Missouri's had the Nixon Missouri Shrink Missouri government decision that encourages, I think, the original encourages us to go forward with some sort of contribution limits and with the confidence that they're going to be upheld. I would say that there's three probably key elements in any campaign contribution, campaign finance reform package you would adopt. And I think all three have to go together, and that's been a problem in other states that we're trying to rectify with our package of bills here with SJR 3 and Senate Bill 379. First and foremost, of course, you have to have some sort of contributions on limits that are reasonable, that allow one to get their message out, but at the same time get away from that appearance of corruption or undue influence. Second, you have to go ahead and control the soft money. That's been a problem at the federal level and been a problem in other states. And last but not least, you have to have some handle on independent expenditures. My understanding is that at the federal level, and I'll defer to my good attorney friend here, but at the federal level, until the U.S. Supreme Court changes its view of advocacy, the best we can do is define express advocacy like we do in 379 and try to get a handle on the reporting aspects to hopefully get some handle on that aspect of the campaign finance reform dilemma. So these bills taken together from my standpoint address those issues as best we can, given the state of Oregon at this point in time. I don't have any pride in the specifics of the bills we have. I do have pride in the intent of those bills. If there was a desire on the part of this committee or those that testify here today to go with a constitutional piece and put all the contribution limits and the independent expenditure reporting in one statutory piece, I would be in favor of that. I guess I would urge the committee to look at perhaps putting a small work group together of interested parties that could discuss the various pros and cons using your input where you'd like to see us go, and come back to this committee at a date in the not-too-distant future with a package that everyone can kind of get behind and see if we can't move this ball down the field a little bit and encourage citizens to step up to the plate and feel a greater part of their state government. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Williams.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. I do appreciate the opportunity for having scheduled these bills and the opportunity to be able to speak to the committee. And I want you to tell you that I approached the issue of campaign finance reform with some degree of reservation. I'm usually pretty cautious about wading into constitutional amendments referred by the legislature. But I will tell you that as I have evaluated the cases both from a national level and the Oregon's cases, and then from my own political experience in this state since the initial campaign finance reform measure that was moved by initiative and passed, I am also a pragmatist, and I know that at some point those who are pressing various versions of campaign finance reform through the initiative process will craft one that is constitutional and will craft one that will be successful and will actually pass. And we will be stuck with whatever that mechanism is. And my sense is that generally the people are supportive enough of the concept of campaign finance reform, be it from an anti-government perspective or from a belief that there's too much money in politics, whether rightly or wrongly, that we will get stuck with something much worse than what we could craft reasonably balanced and fairly among ourselves to the legislative process and offer to the people as a solution to this issue. As my good colleague from the Senate indicated, we are only one of five states that has an unlimited approach to campaign finance laws.
And there is a great piece of material that I would assume your committee administrator has also distributed to you from NCSL, which evaluates each of those states individually. And it is amazing to see that in states that have very, very narrow limits on campaign finance in the amounts of contributions, in states that have larger limits, more like that being proposed in this bill of $1,000 or $5,000 level contributions, they manage to elect the legislature, they manage to elect statewide offices, and their system doesn't appear to crumble. Now, I have no doubt, and I firmly believe, that political speech, which I also believe equates to money, and this would be a limitation on political speech, was intended to be protected by Article 1, Section 8 of the Oregon Constitution at the time that it was drafted. You also know that that section has been applied to a lot of other things that aren't political speech, be they commercial speech or expression through topless dancing and a myriad of other issues. But I do believe that if we don't take the step to begin to regulate ourselves through this process and draft a bill that balances fairly the ability to contribute from business interests versus, again, fairly balancing the ability for unions and others to participate in the process. If we can't find that balance, someone else will craft it for us. And when they craft it for us, it will not be as balanced as what we, through the legislature, can craft ourselves. I won't belabor some of the points that were similar to those raised by Senator Schrader on this bill, but I will tell you that I, like Senator Schrader, I'm not necessarily wedded to any particular provision in this bill. I'm not necessarily wedded. Are you with it? See the governor sign the package, Senator.
Yeah, excellent piece of legislation that we.
Excellent.
So we leave Senator
stumbled through for 3 weeks.
Okay.
Did I destroy my credibility with that one comment?
While we have this break, the alert Senator Beyer to my right here has noted that you neglected to identify yourself for the record.
Oh, I apologize, Senator Beyer. Max Williams, State Representative, House District 35.
My
apology to the committee.
Thank you, Representative. We want to make sure you get proper credit for your.
Good. Right. Thank you, Representative Shetterly.
I'll just point out in closing, colleagues, that I'm like Senator Schrader, am not married to any particular provisions of this bill. I've reviewed the proposed amendments conceptual amendments offered by the Secretary of State's office and found them instructive. I could be persuaded to potentially put the contribution limits in statute and to use a broader approach in opening the door, I think, with some work and some assurances as to how that might operate. But again, I want to underscore the point. The point is, either we will come to campaign finance reform on our own as a legislature and craft a balanced bipartisan package that will work, or campaign finance reform will eventually be done to us with no guarantee that it will be balanced, with no guarantee that it will be fair, and with no guarantee that it will necessarily work when it's finally put into effect. I would much rather have us be involved in that process than have it done to us, and that's the reason that I've been willing to co-sponsor these bills with Senator Schrader, and to urge the committee to address this issue and would support his suggestion that you package all the campaign finance reform proposals together, have a bit of a work group, and see what kind of consensus could be built around the subject. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any thoughts, either of you, on how you could take more steps than just reporting to control the independent expenditures that, at least last time, were the inadvertent result of campaign finance limitations?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my sense is, and I would defer to Mr. Reutlin, who works with this every day in Legislative Council's office, but my sense is that given the federal court pronouncements with respect to the rights of independent expenditures, that reporting is perhaps, I think, right now the only viable mechanism to attempt to address those issues.
I would just, if I may, Madam Chair, or members of the committee, add, I agree with Representative Williams. The positive aspect of this bill compared to what we had before, where quite frankly independent expenditures were a huge problem under the 94 initiative, is that these limits are much higher. Therefore, there will be less incentive because I think the candidates can get their message out a little better under these auspices. And secondly, with the enhanced reporting, I think that also provides an accelerated timeline for candidates to either disavow or acknowledge independent expenditures.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee?
Just a quick comment.
we'll have to go. And that is, both of you touched on something that's very interesting, not only the rising cost campaign, but also the comparisons of other states. One of the things we've done in Oregon that you won't find on the comparisons of other states is something we've done to ourselves, which has cost Jack the price of campaigning up, which is vote by mail. Every time I get involved with a campaign, or my campaign, I should say, I'm reminded of the old Bill Murray movie in which Bill Murray wakes up and every day is the exact same day. And that's what we have in Oregon when we have these 14 or 16 days in a row of campaign day. I would be curious in the task force or just in the discussion not to forget that fact. I'd also be curious as to know what price do all the various stakeholders at that task force bring to the cost of campaigning as a result of vote by mail. I'm intrigued by several of the suggestions that are made, but I don't know if we want to go so far in setting out a forward-thinking plan if we think we still live under the day before the election is the last day before the election, because we don't live in that world anymore. So just as a comment, I think the work group will be put together, and I want to make sure that we don't lose sight of that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would tend to agree with Representative Atkinson that it is something that ought to be considered as you approach how you develop, if you're going to have limits, what those limits ought to be. There's no question it's increased the cost of campaigning, and I've never been a big proponent of vote by mail. I think that genie is out of the bottle. I don't think there's any way we're ever going to put it back in, but there's no question that it's driven up the cost of campaigning.
Okay, and to clear, I believe yours, Bill, is the one that sets the limits in the Constitution, and
that's
you would
correct.
Be receptive
correct.
To giving the authority through a constitutional amendment and having the actual limits be statutory.
Receptive, Madam Chair, would be the way I would describe it. I have certain concerns that allows a certain amount of adjustment without a lot of consideration. So there might be some other mechanisms that you could put into place to protect a legislature who would come in and drop those levels below a level in which I think you could make it unconstitutional if you weren't careful. And I think there's some issues that you could maybe build in as additional protections.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
And in the back, I see Senator Devlin. Are you and Mark, are you on the same bill, you and Senator Devlin?
No.
Okay. Okay. All right, fine. We'll take you, and then we'll move to Representative Haas. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm here today to testify on,
for the record,
yes, on SJR 15. I'm Senator Richard Devlin from Senate District 19. SJR 15 is a measure that I've had a similar measure in previous sessions, and I want to, by way of experience, just recall some of the my experiences with campaign finance reform and with campaigns in general. When I was first elected to public office, it was the city council in the city of Tualatin, the community that at that time was about 12,000 people, and I believe my total expenditures were about $700 in that campaign. Around that time, I think if you saw a high-profile House campaign, it might be in the range of $25,000 to $45,000. By 1990, a high-profile House campaign could have probably reached the level of $80,000 to $100,000. In this last election cycle, the going rate for a targeted House race, and I'm just using language that's used commonly outside of this building, was $250,000 to $300,000, and the going rate for a targeted Senate race was between $500,000 and $750,000. We are not very far away from a Senate race for the state Senate costing $1 million. In fact, I would predict that we won't be much more than a couple election cycles before we reach that level. I would also anticipate, if you were to look at the next election cycle, just in targeted races in the House and Senate, both by Republicans and Democrats, our expenditures will probably exceed $10 million. Campaign finance reform is a significant issue, but it is not the only issue that affects the electoral process. There are other issues that are just as important that I think that this committee could consider, and I will bring those forward at some time when there's legislation on those other issues. Mr. Ruttlinger has done a very good job of explaining all the ramifications and all the limitations on various measures you could propose relative to campaign finance reform. I went through Measure 9 and was a candidate under Measure 9 in 1996. In fact, I raised a little bit more than $50,000 in that race and had approximately about 1,000 contributions received from individuals of under $100 each. But I was in a situation where there were significant contrasts between myself and the opposition. And I found many candidates who were running in other seats that on both sides, whether they're Democrat or Republican, had problems raising $8,000 to $10,000 in those races. I also was involved with and at least became quite aware of ballot measure 6 in November 2000, which was a public financing of campaigns, which I have some misgivings about public financing. I didn't speak out against that measure, but I did believe that the people had a right to at least present it to the voters, and the voters soundly rejected it. And if you would note, if that measure had passed, that measure, in order for it to work, would require an appropriation of the legislature in terms of providing public financing to campaigns. So even if the voters had not overwhelmingly rejected it and they had actually passed it, can you imagine trying to get an appropriation for publicly financing campaigns during this particular session? SDR 15 is a little bit different from the other measures you've seen before you, because its total purpose is simply to limit contributions. It leaves the limitations actually up either to the legislature or to the people by the initiative process. Its intent, although I could not probably control its interpretation, would be to limit contributions, not to prohibit. Because I think too many times when campaign finance reform is proposed, the actual intent is to limit one interest group or another interest group or one entity or another entity, i.e. the common limitations that are attempted to be placed on collective bargaining units, unions, or the attempts to limit corporate contributions. Many times when campaign finance measures are proposed, they're actually trying to limit free speech. My purpose isn't to limit free speech. My purpose is simply to get the cost of campaigns under control, because we're going to get to a point when the cost of these campaigns are literally going to preoccupy candidates and others literally full-time for not simply the interim, but for probably without actually an end in sight, because the cost is simply becoming dramatic. As was said earlier, we are only one of five states without any limitations. The only purpose of the measure that I have before you, SJR 15, is simply the most minor modification to the Constitution that is possible to allow a discussion of actual campaign finance reform in this state. Its purpose is to open that door for the discussion. Its purpose is so that there is a broad discussion of those issues, so that we don't end up with a measure actually that has not been thought out, that all of the parties that would be interested have not had the ability to be in the process to determine what's in that measure. Because quite clearly, I think this is a legitimate issue worthy of public discussion, and I think that we have to craft a measure that meets the interest of Oregonians. In closing, let me say one other thing that might surprise some of the people here in the audience. One of the things that I've seen wrong, or that I see a problem with campaign finance reform, is many times people that write campaign finance reform measures have never been in targeted campaigns. They have no idea of what the actual costs are of running a campaign. I would think that reasonable levels for running a House and Senate campaign wouldn't be $20,000 or $30,000, because it clearly wouldn't be possible in our districts to get a candidate's message out for those kinds of dollars. If candidates were able to raise in the neighborhood of maybe $100,000 for a House district, $200,000 for a Senate district, I think we would be in a much better environment than what we are in now, where before we know it, there will be Senate campaigns that cost $1 million plus.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. Question, Senator Corcoran.
In on line 9 in your bill, you propose that the Legislative Assembly or the people through the initiative process may enact laws limiting contributions. Is it assumed that by the Legislative Assembly you mean with the consent of the governor?
Madam Chair, Senator Corcoran, yes, it would be. I think this is the common language that's put into most measures like this, and the assumption is that the governor would still have the veto power available to him or her.
Another question, please.
Yes.
Sure.
That would not apply to a referral.
No, it would not.
Okay. Another question. I'm a little bit concerned about the... I mean, if this had been in the Constitution over the past 8 years, over the past 10 years, there would have been very strong likelihood that there would have been a referral run out that would have been seriously damaging to labor unions and protected the rights of corporations to finance campaigns. How is there any protection built into your bill to look at that kind of specific partisan behavior, whether it was by the Republicans or the Democrats?
Madam Chair, Senator Corcoran, there is not, but the intent of this measure, and I would have to check with Mr. Ruttlinger on an issue that would be related to this. The intent of this measure ultimately would be that it be referred to the November election. And should it pass in the November election, obviously the legislature would be going into session the session after. And I would not want to express it this way, but some people have expressed it, is that there would be a gun at the head of the legislature that if it wanted to actually honestly attempt to do campaign finance reform, it would be incumbent on them to pass a measure in that session or face the possibility that the public may do it. And some of the interests that you spoke about that might want to have some of those impacts on certain entities might attempt to go out and do that also.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Senator Evelyn? Thank you. We really appreciate you being here in front of us today. Representative Hass, Mark Hass, please. And we opened hearings on all of the proposals before us. So.
Thank you, committee. I'll be brief. I know there are good people behind me who have a lot to say on this issue. For the record, my name is Mark Hass, House District 27. I'd very much, before we start, like to thank Ted Ruttlinger for his work in this. I think we're all sort of crumping around some very swampy legal grounds here for those of us who are not attorneys, and he has become the foremost authority on this, so we're really lucky to have him. I want to campaign for SJR 20 here, if I could. Not so much that bill in itself, though, but for the concept. There is one thing about Oregon's campaign finance laws today. They're pretty simple to understand. We have none. As a former journalist, I'm fiercely protective of our free speech amendment, but as a candidate and a legislator, I just can't see any other way to control the flow of special interest cash into campaigns. This last campaign season, somewhere between $15 and $20 million was spent on just legislative campaigns. And in several high-profile cases, as you've heard, it was not uncommon for one candidate to receive more than $100,000 from one source. And I've said before that all that money is like pouring broken glass into the gears of our democracy. Reasonable campaign limits will still allow candidates to run campaigns, but they will put the brakes on those huge contributions that raise serious questions about who will be serving whom in the legislature. I will never insult legislators by claiming their votes are for sale. But please don't insult me by claiming campaign money doesn't influence the way business is done in this legislature. And I think the people of Oregon understand that, and I think as we saw in the Measure 9 vote a few years ago by a 74% yes vote, that they do want limits. They do want thoughtful limits on how much is spent in a campaign. So with that, I hope that we can put this measure out so that voters can take the first step to doing this by amending our Constitution. And I thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Hass? Thanks for joining us today. Next up is Don Bishop for Senator Morissette, who couldn't be here today. And then on deck, I'm going to call John Lynn back from our Secretary of State's office. Please proceed and welcome.
Thank you. Chair Brown and committee members, I'm Don Bischoff, Legislative Assistant to Senator Bill Morissette. For the record, my address is 2688 Onyx Street, Eugene. Senator Morissette apologizes for not being able to be here today. He has a major bill in the Education Committee where he serves affecting University of Oregon, which is now partly in his district. And so he felt the need to be there to deal with that.
A very tiny part is in his district.
It depends. The law school part is in his district, and I'm not sure whether that's good or bad.
That was a trade. And where are you located, sir?
I'm across the street from his district. I am in Senator Corcoran's district. And proud to be there.
He complained bitterly to Bradbury about that.
Senator Morissette has reviewed all the bills you have before you today and believes that any of them would be an improvement over the current no-limit situation of campaign financing. A lot of this you've already heard today. He believes that the intrusion of unlimited money into political campaigns can distort the political process and create the dangers of corruption and undue influence, or the appearance of corruption and undue influence. To cure that, he would ask the people to amend the Constitution as outlined in his SJR 10. The vote on such a resolution would be an opportunity to test the waters to see if the people believe it is time for some control of campaign spending. If they do, then future legislative sessions or the people in future initiative campaigns would have the opportunity to debate and set the precise limits. Senator Morissette notes that the language of SJR 20 is virtually identical to SJR 10, minus a bit of mild hyperbole in SJR 10, and he would be happy to join in a merger of those two measures if that's the committee's desire. Thank you for your consideration, and I'll be glad to try to answer any questions.
Thanks for joining us. Senator Corcoran, any questions for your constituent?
No, I just want him treated really well, even though he's very wrong-minded on this particular issue.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anybody
sir.
Else? Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
John, why don't you come on up? And Janice Thompson, you are on deck. Trying to get Oregonians in the mood, Roger. Senator Beyer.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. I'm John Lindback, Director of the Elections Division in the Secretary of State's office. I'll keep my comments brief today. We wanted to submit comments, and we did so in writing for you on both SJR 3 and Senate Bill 379. We'd like to suggest some conceptual amendments to SJR 3, or well, to both. On SJR 3, we think the legislature, we should authorize the legislature to define the term with respect to a single election, which is used in that bill. Here's the problem. Right now, under current campaign laws, as candidates, you're required to report aggregate amounts of contributions and expenditures to us based on the laws in ORS 260. This particular proposal under SJR 3 would sort of mess with those aggregates a little bit through the definition, through this phrase of with respect to a single election. And we would encourage that there be a conceptual amendment to SJR 3 if you want to go forward in this manner to make it consistent with ORS 260 so that we don't have you faced with the situation you were faced with back in the mid-90s where you had to track a variety of different kinds of aggregates. Let's keep it with what we have in ORS 260, and that's conceptual amendment to SJR 3. Under Senate Bill 379, there's a requirement in that bill that those who engage in independent expenditures report that independent expenditure within 24 hours. We would suggest that that be changed to 48, or within two business days, so that it's consistent with the time period now given for filing contributions received during the legislative session, and it gives people just a little bit more time to get their act together. 24 hours is awfully fast. So I'll halt my comments there.
Thank you. Any questions for John Lindback? Seeing none, thanks for joining us. Janice Thompson. And then on deck is Norman Terrell.
Good afternoon. My name is Janice Thompson. I'm the executive director of an organization called the Money and Politics Research Action Project. As an organization, MIPRAP believes that contribution limits can be one piece of the campaign finance reform puzzle. As an organization, we have a range of goals and interest in seeing an increase in competition in races, different ways for races to be able to operate, and then as well as reducing the cost of campaigns. So the goal, I think, that if you look at the data, you see that contribution limits do help out with is reducing contribution levels and subsequent spending in elections. Given that background, looking at the bills as an organization, we kind of prefer the approach exemplified in HJR 10, 15, or 20 that amends the Constitution to allow for limits rather than putting all the details into the Constitution. Taking a look at, though, at SJR 3, I would say that the limits are a bit high. You know, there is this a balancing act. You don't want to set the limits so low because, as Ted Rutlinger was saying, you know, it's important to make sure there's enough money in the system to have people run effective campaigns. But obviously, they can also be set too high. So those limits to me look like they're a little on the high side. One positive feature in SJR 3 is the differentiation of small contributor PACs that helps address the diversity in PACs and an interest in not wanting to hurt the kind of little guy contributor. Just a couple of points regarding SJR 10, 20, and 15 to address one of the questions raised by Senator Corcoran. Hope I get all the numbers right here. 15 allows only for the limitation and not the prohibition of limits. So, you know, you raised the issue of, you know, different sectors being hurt or not hurt. There's some differentiation there because of the specificity of, you know, with are you just limiting contributions or is the option of banning some contributions a factor?
But, Madam Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
Why couldn't there be unfair limitations?
Madam Chair, Senator Corcoran. There could be. I'm just saying.
That was the point I was trying
to. Okay. I was just kind of raising the point that kind of along those lines, you could also just out and out ban contributions. And so that there's just a point of difference between SJR 10 and 20 as compared to 15. One factor, though, in including the language allowing for a ban or prohibition, as seen in SJR 10 and 20, is that it provides the possibility to constitutionally reinstate the ban on contributions during the legislative session, which, as you know, were no longer ruled enforceable at the beginning of the last legislative session. Whether or not that's something you want to do is, you know, it's just something to be aware of that with that allowing that prohibition language in actual the constitutional referral. If such restrictions were revisited, they should really focus probably on only the period of the regular legislative session, just to clarify, you know, just a little clarification could be helpful. I also want to speak to the Senate Bill 379, because as has been raised in questions and previous testimony, regardless of how the contribution limits are imposed, analysis of the 1996 elections and of election in other states where contribution limits are in place tells us that independent expenditures will increase very dramatically. Therefore, the language in Senate Bill 379, kind of clarifying the definition of independent expenditures and allowing for the increased disclosure, are very, very important. And
I have some documentation.
This is a summary through the 90s of total contributions only to legislative candidates. I pulled out the statewide candidates just because in every two-year cycle it's a different set of statewide candidates who are up. So certainly this demonstrates, you know, the steady rise we have been seeing in the levels of candidates or contributions to candidates and the resulting, you know, increase in the cost of campaigns that previous folks have testified about. One note, however, is that the 2002 total figure has plateaued slightly. It's not quite as much on the same precipitous increase that has been seen in previous election cycles. The 2002 figure isn't here yet just because I don't have all the data to do the sector breakdown. But I'll just bring your point out in the column under 1996 that, as I mentioned, you know, the definite goal of campaign finance reform that is realized through contribution limits is dropping the level of contributions. So the direct contributions went from $11 million, excuse me, in 94 down to a little under $3.5 million. There was, however, as Senator Burdick mentioned, skyrocketing levels of independent expenditures to the tune of $2.6 million. I mean, the total spending, if you add those independent expenditures in, was still less. But as has been stated, independent expenditures are independent, and people, you know, did raise concerns about losing control of their campaigns, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why Senate Bill 379 needs to be a very important piece of any package.
Madam Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
Why did you not disaggregate the independent expenditures in 98 and 2000?
Madam Chair, Senator Corcoran, independent expenditures in the elections before 96 and after 96 existed, but just nowhere near at the level that they were evident in the 96 elections. But the other reason why I didn't delineate them, in addition to just being, like, you know, dramatically lower, so as to be kind of negligible by comparison, is actually the final point I wanted to make, which is the need for a slight change in independent expenditure disclosure requirements that I believe can be dealt with in rulemaking. Right now, independent expenditures made by individuals or organizations that are not structured as a PAC do all their independent expenditure reporting on a specific report for that purpose called the PC-10. However, a political committee or a PAC, except for the relatively brief period of time, about a week and a half, right before the election, does not file a separate independent expenditure disclosure form, the PC-10. Rather, it's only disclosed in their regular regular expenditure reportings, the PC3. And the problem with this is that to track independent contributions by an existing PAC, you kind of have to know who's making them. And so the recommendation is that regardless of when during the election cycle a PAC is making an independent expenditure, that they follow the guidelines that are currently only applied in this narrow window right before the election and report it on their PC3s, which they need to do to make all their books add up, but they also report it on the PC10s. And that way, anybody who walks into the elections division could say, I want to see the independent expenditure book, and it would see everything. And right now, you can't. Which is the other reason why there's no exact numbers given for those other years. The reason there's an exact number given in 96 is actually because of some particular analysis done by the Elections Division that kind of collected all that data. But the current reporting has this little glitch in it that, you know, makes it harder to track down all the independent expenditures. I mean, I've looked at it enough to be able to tell you that it's, you know, negligible compared to that $2.6 million. But, you know, if we're taking a look at this, this is one little area to just tighten up the disclosure a little bit. And those are my comments, but I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Very interesting. Any questions for Janice?
I have a question.
Senator Corcoran.
What state has the best laws on the books in this regard?
Madam Chair, Senator Corcoran, I think you would have to base that answer on your assessment of what kind of reform goals you were trying to meet.
Let me re-ask the question. Based on your assessment of reform goals that you're trying to meet, what's the best state?
Okay. Senator Corcoran, Madam Chair. As I mentioned, as an organization, MIPRAP is interested in reform that really expands who can run for office in the first place, that really can start to shift how elections can occur, which means, you know, really shifting from the current scenario where you folks know probably far better than I how much money during a, how much time during a campaign you spend asking for dollars, but, you know, there's estimates depending on the competitiveness of the race that it ranges, you know, anywhere from 25 to 75% of a candidate's time. And then a system that really enables folks after they're elected to make decisions that are based more on constituent interests than being unduly influenced by contributor interests. And there's two states that have adopted public funding clean money systems that are indeed have good documentation that that broad range of goals are being met. So,
and they are?
Maine and Arizona.
Okay.
And North Carolina, and North Carolina just adopted a similar funding system for the election of Supreme Court races, or Supreme Court judges, excuse me.
Madam Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
So do any of the measures before us today contain language that resembles Maine and Arizona?
Madam Chair, Senator Corcoran, no. That's why I characterize it as a piece of the puzzle. In both of those states, those systems were put in place on top of existing contribution limits. So it's not at all mutually exclusive reform strategies.
Thanks.
I'm going to ask a follow-up. Senator Corcoran, if your organization is concerned about who can run for office, isn't another piece of the puzzle, though, being able to afford to be in office? And when, you know, the legislative salary is whatever it is, $1,237 a month plus per diem during session. I mean, doesn't that discount a whole heck of a lot of people from doing this job? I mean, granted that the election piece is a part of it, but...
Madam Chair, I think that just speaks to, though there's a need for campaign finance reform, even the kind of reform that Senator Corcoran finally got me to talk about, It's still not a panacea. I think there's lots and lots of pieces to having our democracy work as effectively as we really want it to.
Yes. No questions? Thank you. Next on the list, Norman Turrell. Did I say your last name right?
Turrell.
Okay, my apologies.
There was a great piece in the Oregonian the other day about the county commissioners in Lane County being totally incapable of pronouncing names correctly of witnesses. It's hilarious.
Are you trying to make me feel better, Senator Corcoran?
No, I was trying to put the spotlight on your error. This is, you know, open campaign finance stuff.
Rhymes with Pearl, if that helps.
Pearl, that helps a lot.
Madam Chair and Committee, I've submitted two separate testimonies on behalf of the League of Women Voters that I now am going to attempt to combine the two of them. Thank you for this opportunity to discuss campaign finance reform in the context of contribution limits. For the record, my name is Norman Turrell.
I speak today on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Oregon. And yes, the League does encourage men to be members. I am on the State Action Committee holding the campaign finance reform portfolio. The League is a grassroots, nonpartisan political organization that encourages informed citizens' participation in government and provides voter education materials and activities. For more than 20 years, the League has advocated for reforms in the financing of political campaigns, and one step in that process is limiting campaign contributions. The cost of running for public office, particularly for the Oregon Assembly, has skyrocketed in the past 20 years. The only decrease in the history of the millions spent occurred when there were limits in place during the 1996 election cycle, with the 1994 enacted campaign contribution limits in place. The figures for 1992, 94, 98, 2000, 2002 show the steady rise to where many legislative campaigns now cost more than $100,000, and a total of close to $20 million is spent in these campaigns. SJR 3 enables contribution limits to be set in Oregon, but it also puts into the Constitution the details of those limits. While the League strongly supports limits, we do not believe the specifics of who can pay or accept what amounts should be in the Constitution. We prefer a simple amendment to Section 8, Article 2 of the State Constitution, which would enable the setting of limits. Of the four bills on the subject being considered today, we prefer the somewhat more comprehensive SGR 20. SGR 20 is a very simple amendment to the Oregon Constitution, which would enable the establishment of contribution limits or prohibitions, either by the Legislative Assembly or by an initiative measure. Since the Supreme Court has made it clear that unless the Constitution is amended to state otherwise, it is unconstitutional to impose contribution limits in Oregon campaigns. The League joins with others who are very interested in reducing the costs of political campaigns and making it more attractive for more citizens to participate in decision-making in this state. We hope this committee and its House counterpart will fully examine the proposals for setting campaign contribution limits and agree on an amendment which would improve the climate for political participation in Oregon. It is one of the League's primary governmental issues for 2003, and we would like to work with you to make it happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you joining us. You want to
Pardon me?
And we have your other.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Next up, Steve Lanning and Dave Finnegy. Do you guys mind coming up at the same time? What are you going to say? No, right? Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Steve Lanning. I'm with the Oregon AFL-CIO. I just want to make a couple of verbal comments about SJR 3 and also the constitutional amendment referrals as well. We look at this, I mean, you know, the labor unions are usually outspent by business, and it depends on what numbers you look at, 4 or 5 to 1. But there's a delicate balance that's there. And whenever there's a campaign finance proposal out there, we take a clear look at whether or not we think that delicate balance is going to change in whatever proposals there are. And in looking at SJR 3, we think that the actual limit on contributions for small contributor PACs is a step in the right direction, but it doesn't take into account that there are some large unions out there that have a membership of 20 or 30,000. And when they give a contribution, it looks like a large contribution, but actually compared to their members over a two-year period, it's not that large. It's fairly small. There are some small unions that actually are collecting and giving more per member than some of the large ones. But when you see that ultimate dollar amount, it looks fairly large. So we think that SGR 3 will start to tip the balance against labor and the delicate balance that we have with business. The other thing is that the single organization definition in SJR 3 on page 2, lines 8 and 9, talks about all political committees established by a labor organization will be treated as a single committee. There's a number of unions and labor organizations that have multiple PACs that are established by the same organization, but they operate almost independently of one another, except for the endorsement process for candidates. And by that definition, we think that that will further tilt against labor as far as that delicate balance between business and labor. And for sure, and it doesn't matter when you talk about independent expenditures, as we saw in the 1996 election cycle, it doesn't matter to us whether CNE reports for independent expenditures are required on a 24-hour basis or not. With the high cost of campaigns and the high stakes in election results, independent expenditures will be back, and there'll be no control by candidates, just like in 1996. And lastly, our recommendation would be to hold off on referrals that would amend the Oregon Constitution until there's some kind of an agreement in place by the folks that give and the folks that receive campaign contributions. And over the years in this building, there doesn't appear to be that kind of consensus at this point. And if we move forward and amend the Constitution, we feel that it'll be left up to interest groups that can collect enough signatures to get whatever they want on the ballot, and that'll be our so-called campaign finance reform. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks. Dave?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, David Fidanke, Executive Director, American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon, here to testify in opposition to SJR 3, SJR 10, SJR 15, and SJR 20.
Do you like Senate Bill 379?
We have no position on Senate Bill 379, but if you want me to address that when I'm done with the others, I could say a few things. For those of you that are not familiar with the position of the ACLU on campaign finance reform, both nationally and here in Oregon, the ACLU has long opposed limits on campaign contributions and expenditures. We believe that campaign contributions are an expression of political support. We believe that those expressions of political support are and should be protected by the Constitution. Here in Oregon, they are protected by the Constitution because we have a better Bill of Rights in Oregon than the Bill of Rights that was adopted in 1789 by the United States Constitutional Convention, by Congress, following the Constitutional Convention. And a number of these proposals refer obliquely to Article 1, Section 8, which is the protection of free expression in Oregon, which reads, "No law shall be passed restraining the free expression of opinion or restricting the right to speak, write, or print freely on any subject whatever, but every person shall be responsible for the abuse of this right." Now, that is a very protective provision of the Constitution. It protects the right of all Oregonians to express their views on all kinds of topics. But there is no topic that goes more to the heart of our system of government than the political process, than the process of electing candidates to public office. So we are extremely opposed, in the strongest possible terms, I don't know how else to say it, to any proposed constitutional amendment that would weaken the Oregon free speech protection. And in particular, we're opposed to a constitutional amendment that would take away the rights of Oregonians to be involved in expressing their views on the political process. This is an incredibly complex area of law. All the committee needs to do to start to begin to understand the complexity, other than the complexity that you all know firsthand from having run for public office, is to look at the language of Senate Joint Resolution 3, which begins making choices about which contributions are going to be limited and how they're going to be limited. That is not something that should be done in the Constitution. As the witness from the League of Women Voters said, we strongly support their concern about adding what are, in essence, statutory provisions to the Oregon Constitution. We believe that those decisions, the decisions about what contributions are going to be reported, when they're going to be reported, what contributions, what committees are going to be treated how, are decisions that need to be made after careful deliberation by the Legislative Assembly. Not in the heat of an election by voters who are not familiar with the intricacies of campaign finance reporting statutes and other campaign laws in the state of Oregon. There are a couple of other specific problems I wanted to point out with some of the other resolutions. Excuse me. Two of the measures, SJR 10 and SJR 20, allow not just limiting contributions, but also prohibiting contributions, but don't say what types of contributions could be prohibited. We believe it's a dangerous idea to prohibit contributions, even more dangerous than limiting them. Those two resolutions also are very general in talking about the financing of election campaigns. They are not limited to candidate elections. SJR 15 does limit its scope to candidate elections. And, of course, even if you're going to throw out the entire Oregon Constitution and start from scratch, the U.S. Constitution does not allow the kind of limitations in ballot measure campaigns that the First Amendment permits in candidate elections. And finally, I just want to point out for the record that what these measures are attempting to do is make the Oregon Free Speech Clause irrelevant with regard to limitations on campaign contributions. And I assume allow putting in place the kind of limits that are in place under the federal system and in many other states. I would submit to this committee that those limitations have not worked. Most of those limitations have just had the effect of making candidates go to more places to raise the money they need to carry out election campaigns and or encourage independent expenditures which are made without any accountability on the part of the candidate, without any control on the part of the candidate. If you want to leave candidates in control of elections and make candidates less beholden to the special interests that they have to go to for contributions, the only solution that makes sense is public financing of election campaigns. And the ACLU does support that that option.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
David.
Madam Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
What's the ACLU's position on the issue that came up a couple of years back where now I can be treated to three hit pieces in a campaign without attribution?
Madam Chair, Senator Corcoran, the federal Constitution, as interpreted by the U.S. Supreme Court, has held that an anonymous political speech is protected by the federal First Amendment. The case that I believe was an Ohio case went through the history behind the adoption of the First Amendment and indeed the debate that ensued around ratification of the federal constitution and whether or not there should be a Bill of Rights. That debate was carried out in public by a series of position papers that were published, the Federalist Papers and others, that were published anonymously. So the history is very clear that Congress, in writing the First Amendment, intended to protect anonymous speech. So there isn't anything we in Oregon can do to change our Constitution that's going to have any impact on that issue.
Madam Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
So the ACLU has no position on this?
We support the requirements for campaign finance disclosure, but we believe there are exceptions that must be recognized by federal and state agencies. And for example, there was a case where we filed a brief on behalf of the Socialist Workers Party that objected to being required to disclose the identity of its contributors because it would have a chilling effect on people making contributions to that organization. In general, we agree that there is a right to anonymous speech. We also support full disclosure with some exceptions in the context of political campaigns.
Madam Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
So you said that you supported, in a socialist workers situation, you supported the suppression of those names? Did
yes.
I get that right?
Yes, we did.
Madam Chair. So would you allow rich industrialists in the state who make contributions sometimes as individuals that are greater than 40,000 member unions to have that kind of anonymity?
Not unless there was a compelling case that disclosure of their identities would chill their expression, and I don't think it would.
Well, my observation, Madam Chair, it's not a question, it's an observation, is that I think the ACLU Mr. Podanky describes this as such a complex issue, but it's not to the ACLU. To the ACLU, money is speech. And my concern is that the ACLU and other organizations in trying to get at one part of protection of free speech turn a blind eye to the fact, for instance, that we have the greatest separation of wealth in this state and in this country that we've had since the Great Depression. And the ramifications of that on the political process are extreme, and it just bothers me that you can talk about the Oregon Constitution having even greater freedoms in that respect, but also having the flip side of that being that you can't abuse that, and then wondering when the ACLU will have a perspective on what that abuse would look like. In other words, if that speech is money, and the money gets the candidate elected who suppresses the civil rights, then what does the organization do about that? That's the dilemma I think you guys are in.
Madam Chair, if I might respond.
If you wish to respond, feel free.
Senator Corcoran, with all due respect, Senator, I don't believe my testimony was that money is speech, nor is it the position of the ACLU that money is speech, nor do I believe that's the position that the courts have taken with regard to campaign finance restrictions. What I said and what the courts have said, in particular the Oregon Supreme Court, is that making a contribution is an expression of political support, and that is expression. If someone, the analogy that Chief Justice, I believe it was Chief Justice Gillette in Vannata versus Kiesling used, was to say that if someone was standing on a street corner saying, "Vote for Senator John Doe," that is a political statement. That is an expression of support. It's no different than a person making a financial contribution to a candidate that they believe will do a good job of representing their views in the legislature. That is the heart of the people coming together to support candidates that reflect their views, is the heart of the election campaign process. And if your goal is to decrease the amount of time the candidates need to spend going to people with money asking for contributions, if your goal is to cut the link between candidates and people with money, then the way to accomplish that is through public financing of elections, not by restricting the amount of a contribution. Because by restricting the amount of the contribution, if you do nothing about the cost of campaigns, all that it means is that you will have, the candidate will have to spend more of their time raising money, because they will be raising it in smaller increments from more people.
Not if that restricts on the amount.
And David, I guess my question would be, do you think that public financing at this point in time is a very pragmatic or practical solution given the state's economic situation?
Madam Chair, as you well know, we can't even keep the courts open 5 days a week or do scores of other things, and that one is, we believe, mandated by the Constitution. So, obviously, the budget situation is dire in this strait, and I'm sure that many would argue it is dire in this state for lots of reasons. They have to do with not just the ailing of the economy, but also the ailing of our political process. I do not believe that these bills are the answer to that problem.
Thanks, David. Thanks, Steve. Any questions? Any other questions? Take care.
Thank you.
Andy Miller and David Buchanan from Common Cause. I figured you two didn't mind sharing the podium. I thought that might be the case.
Thank you, Chair Brown, and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify on SJR 20, one of a number of campaign finance bills we're hearing today. For the record, I'm Andy Miller, Executive Director of Common Cause Oregon. Common Cause is a nonprofit, nonpartisan, citizens lobbying organization promoting open, honest, and accountable government. Common Cause represents the unified voice of the people against corruption in government and big money special interests. I would like to defer to David Buchanan, a board member, former executive director of Common Cause. David has a great interest in and knowledge about the history of campaign finance reform in Oregon. And I would like to let David have the floor.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm David Buchanan. I've been involved with Common Cause for over 20 years. And during that time, the organization's prime focus has been on campaign finance reform. I wanted to talk a little bit about the history of what's happened previously in campaign finance reform. Ted Ruttlinger, in the initial presentation on this, in this hearing, talked some about the court decisions that happened since 1975. I want to go back a little further and tell you why we became kind of unique as one of five states that don't have contribution limits. It didn't start out that way. In the general election of June 1st, 1908, the voters passed 54,042 to 31,301 the Corrupt Practices Act governing elections. This provided for contribution limitations. Those contribution limitations stood us in good stead for most of the 20th century. During the 50s, those contribution limits were raised by the legislature, and then again in the 60s, there was another raise in the contribution limitations. And then the 1973 session, which was occurring simultaneous to the Watergate hearings, which were pointing out to the vast public that there were some real problems with campaign financing as it was conducted in the old way. The Oregon legislature, being
brilliant and ahead of its time, decided to deal with campaign finance regulation at that point, and they passed expenditure limitations. And as part of the bill that passed these expenditure limitations, which were a new thought, a new way of putting limits on the political elections process, some of the provisions were repealing section so-and-so, repealing section so-and-so. You know how any bill has this long list of numbers repealing. The contribution limits were in those repealed sections. The 1974 election was held, and it was a perfectly normal election from the outside observers. Candidates felt that there was a difference because they were limited for a House race of just under $5,000 in expenditures. Senate races were limited to just under $10,000. The numbers weren't an actual dollar amount. It was so many cents times the number of registered voters in the district, so that the number was calculated and then the same number was applied for all of the like legislative districts, and then there were other numbers for congressional races and for statewide races. But those numbers were based on a formula of how many people there were in the district that was being campaigned in. Then after the 1974 election, which in my mind was a glowing success, the 1975 Supreme Court decision, this was Darris versus Myers. Warren Darris was a losing candidate in that campaign, in that election. And then Clay Myers was the Secretary of State. That decision came shortly before the U.S. Supreme Court, in evaluating federal legislation that was the result of the Watergate scandal. The U.S. Supreme Court heard the arguments that expression shouldn't be limited, and yet they saw the evidence that there were some real fairness problems. How do you resolve the irreconcilable conflict between fair and freedom of individual freedom for expression, unlimited expression? And the U.S. Supreme Court in the Buckley versus Vallejo decision said, yes, we can see a way to authorize expenditure limitations. But I'm sorry, I said it the wrong way. We see the rationale for contribution limitations, but we don't find a legal hook to hang expenditure limitations on. So they then sort of laid the arena open for this, all that has happened since. Now, Oregon absolutely took the wrong step a little too soon. So by getting rid of contribution limitations and putting in expenditure limitations, we did the opposite of what the Supreme Court would a year later say was okay. So at that point, Oregon lost its contribution limits that it had had since the early days of the century, and when the court overturned the expenditure limitations, we were now left with nothing. And so ever since that time, the sky's been the limit, anything goes, and then when the voters had a chance to say enough is enough in 1994, they did have an opportunity to put limits back into play in the 96 election. That did put a halt to the unlimited skyrocket of escalating costs, and then that was overturned following the 96 election. Now, the bills before us are to try and be able to go back to how things once were, to allow us to have contribution limitations, the contribution limitations that we lived with and prospered under for most of the last century. Of the bills before us, the one that seems to be the best working piece to start from is SGR 20. We think that that allows kind of the best launching pad for, as was earlier suggested, a working group or some kind of getting together to kind of merge some of these ideas and come up with the strongest idea possible. But clearly, I think that it's the desire of the voters of Oregon to have some kind of limitation. And as Representative Williams talked about, there is the prospect that this will happen at some point in the future, and it would probably be better to have the legislature put in a kind of reasonable, practical, useful kind of a contribution limitation program. That concludes my statement. If you have any questions, be happy to try and answer them.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Thank you for the historical presentation, because I wasn't aware that we'd ever had contribution limits.
Well, when you hear that Oregon's one of only five states, you know, you kind of think that there's a reason why that happened, and there is a good reason, because Oregon certainly was part of the mainstream with contribution limits for most of the time. But then that unfortunate circumstance of taking the wrong path in the 1973 session, we chose the wrong option, and the U.S. Supreme Court came out with the other choice, so we've been without any bulwark against unlimited spending since.
Andy?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I want to reemphasize that we would be very, very interested in working with you, putting together a work group, looking at all sides of this. I agree with Representative Williams, something will happen.
Thank you. Appreciate you joining us. Last but not least, unless there's some folks who didn't sign up, Joe Kaiser, still here?
Joe's going to be very brief. Watch this.
Madam Chair, members of the esteemed Rules Committee, my name is Joe Kaiser. I'm the political director for the Democratic Party of Oregon, and I am going to be very brief because the senator said so. I just want to say quickly that, you know, we do have some campaign finance laws here in Oregon, and reporting is an excellent method by which to limit contributions and expenditures and for voters to find out who they want to support. I think it's very clear that the cost of campaigns have increased significantly, but I think at the same time, you all know that, you know, folks like me are employed to find loopholes in campaign finance laws at the federal level, the state level, any level where there are laws. And this is part of the problem with campaign finance reform. You end up with one of two things every time it occurs. You either end up with a draconian law that doesn't allow you to finance a campaign, as we've heard plenty of people talk about today, or number two, you end up with a law that has too many loopholes that can be worked through, and you end up with the same amount of money coming through again. It doesn't mean we shouldn't try, and I would say from the Democratic Party standpoint, it's not that we're opposed to campaign finance reform. Rather, we're just very cautious about it. I think we feel like, let's not do this unless we're going to do it right and do it in a way that's good for everyone that's involved, who wants to give campaign contributions, who wants to receive campaign contributions, and allows enough time for all of you to do your job when on the campaign trail, which is to get your message out to folks. So I would just close by saying that, you know, a work group sounds great. I think we'd be more than interested in being a part of that work group, but I think we want to craft something that's, you know, reasonable if it's out there, and try to do it through the legislative process rather than putting it out as part of a constitutional change. So, again, I'll just warn against that unfortunate fact that there are plenty of people out there that look for holes in campaign laws, and there hasn't been one that's been perfectly crafted yet. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other folks that wish to tell? Oh, sorry. I should find out if there are any questions. There are none. Thanks. Anybody else who wishes to testify on any of these measures? If there's anybody who did not sign up and is interested in a work group, would you just let me or Senator Clarno or Jim Stembridge know? Do we have any other business? We have no other business. We think we better let Senator Corcoran go home so he can be happy this evening. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and we are adjourned. Thank you.